And welcome back to Channel 9 Live here at the Visual Studio 2012 launch. Just as a reminder, you can tweet us your questions to Channel 9 Live or CH9 Live. And I'm here today now with Brian Harry. Brian, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Now, Brian, I want to clear the air here first. There's a little bit of a controversy out there in the Twitter ecosystem after this morning's keynote. A lot of people, you may know what I'm talking about. A lot of people out there saw that you were not wearing jeans. They said, this is a developer event. These guys should be wearing jeans. I'll give you a chance to defend yourself right here on the air.
Yeah. I wrote a little blog post about that this morning that got some chuckles. So, you know, I live in North Carolina. I don't live here in Seattle. And I went to go pack to come here. And I thought, you know, no one ever said anything to me about what I should wear. So I'm like, well, it's a developer event. I'm going to wear, I'll bring jeans. I'll bring, you know, a decent shirt.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll be good. I speak at, you know, at various things from, you know, pretty often. And so then, like, the day after I got here, I got an email that said, you know, thou shalt wear slacks and, you know, this color shirt. And I just sent back mail and said, sorry.
Don't have it.
I'll be in jeans and a blue shirt because that's what I got.
Nice.
And so I just figured that was the end of it. A couple days later, I got email from the event team that said, hey, what's your sizes? You know, what size shirt and pants? Because we're gonna go get you some clothes. And I'm like, oh my god! So I honestly thought they were joking.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't even imagine they were serious. But they made it pretty clear they were serious.
Nice.
That jeans was not gonna be okay.
Nice.
So, you know, I said, well, I hate to tell you, but I have no idea what my clothes sizes are.
You're kidding.
I'm not kidding. I don't buy clothes. My wife's mother owns a clothing store. So, you know, every Christmas I get, you know, a pile of clothes and I'm covered for the year.
That's hilarious. Well, you look sharp. We're glad to have you here. And we know that deep down, even though you're your business on the outside, you're still a dev on the inside. So I was just talking to Jason Zander, and I think that was a good segue. We were finishing up the conversation. By the way, congratulations on shipping Visual Studio 2012.
Oh, thank you.
Amazing, amazing release. And I'm sure you have your favorite set of features. But I know you're also already thinking about what's next. You're already thinking, okay, let's not rest on our laurels. Let's continue to add value. Tell us a little bit about how customers will see value coming out of your team.
Yeah, so, you know, we never really stopped. We started building a cloud service now, whatever it was, 18 months ago or so, and made it
TFS Preview.
TFS Preview, yeah. Our TFS Team Foundation Service is what we call it. TFSpreview.com is the URL. And so we announced it at Build last year and have then, you know, gradually been expanding it and expanding it. We opened it up at TechEd to sort of just anybody who wants to use it. Mm-hmm. So when we started, you know, normally you're shipping a big product like Visual Studio, you get to the point where you have to slow down the amount of stuff going into it because the localization team has to catch up with you and you've got to make sure it's super, super stable and all of that. So months ago, as that process started, you know, gradually heading down, we just started peeling people off, sorry, and had them work on the service.
Mm-hmm.
So we are now shipping the service every 3 weeks. So it's aligned with our sprint cadence. We do 3-week sprints.
Okay.
And new features come out every 3 weeks. So literally, we ship every 3 weeks. Sometimes it's big, and sometimes it's small.
Sure.
You know, I think, was it 6 weeks ago, we introduced Kanban.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a whole new Kanban experience. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think at the same time, we introduced our Git to TFS bridge that enabled you to use Git with TFS. And then, you know, I think, like, the one we're doing next week, so we've got another deployment next week, it's a pretty small one. There's, you know, a few nice UI widgets, but it's a modest improvement. But that belies some big things that are coming. So give me another sprint or two, and we'll have some pretty cool stuff available.
Maybe we'll get you back here on Channel 9 to talk about it.
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
So that's what's going on kind of in the cloud.
Yes.
Now, I know that, you know, cloud's great if you can use it, but not everybody, maybe due to policy or regulation or certain geographies, they can't all use the cloud.
That's
So we've got the on-premises version of TFS.
Yep.
How do you see those features that you're rapidly iterating on in the cloud showing up in on-premises TFS, or will they?
Yeah, so you know, there's an evolution here. When we first started getting on cloud cadence and shipping often, you know, we realized some of the features that we want to build for the cloud, that we wanted to build in the cloud, they were going to need to be reflected in the client. Mm. We needed new client capabilities to expose the new server features we were building. So that was actually how we first came to the problem of what are we doing about on-premises.
Right.
We've got to have a plan to get the client updated. And you know, it's pretty new thing for us, because historically, you know, we'll ship service packs, we'll ship you know, hot fixes and stuff like that, but we're really pretty aligned at either major releases of Visual Studio or major updates to the platform.
Sure.
You know, a new Windows release or a new phone platform release or something like that. But we needed to have some kind of client cadence that was reasonably aligned with the cloud. So, you know, we sort of went back and forth and ultimately settled on, you know, roughly quarterly. We're going to have a vehicle to get client updates out, and then that sort of grew into a whole plan of Visual Studio updates. And so then the next piece fell into place, which is, in fact, here's the way it actually started is, hey, we need to have mobility of projects between the cloud and on-premises, mm. right? So maybe I've got an on-premises TFS server and I want to go to the cloud. Or maybe I've started in the cloud and now I've gotten serious and I need to bring it on-premises. That's super important.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if the versions in the cloud and on-premises have diverged dramatically, that's going to be an ugly thing, right? It's going to be painful because the features aren't going to match up, and it quite honestly be hard to implement and a bad experience. So we said, all right, we need a way to keep the on-premises server reasonably up to date with what we have in the cloud to make that possible. And then, of course, as we went on, it was obvious also that customers on the on-premises server were going to kind of be pissed if
sure.
you know, they watched the cloud get, you know, a year worth of cool features and they got nothing. And we went back and forth on what we wanted to do there, but ultimately said, you know, at least for now, for a first approximation, we'll align the on-premises server with the on-premises client, sort of shoot for roughly quarterly. I'm not going to make any commitment about exactly what we're doing there, but kind of roughly that cadence. I've got some anxiety about the cost of just from us, from a, you know, quality assurance process of keeping the server up to date that often,
mm-hmm.
but we'll see.
Okay. You
know, it's something we're gonna learn from.
Okay, now, can you tell us a little bit more about the specifics of what we'll see? I think Soma said by the end of this calendar year and the first Visual Studio update, anything you can divulge there?
Yeah, happy to. I wrote a blog post about that today as well. It's, you know, there's actually a lot more that is going to be there, I think, mm-hmm. than what I've said. Right now, I'm sort of focusing on the things that I'm pretty confident are going to be there.
Okay.
But so first of all the stuff we've done, not all, but almost all the stuff we've done in the cloud is going to be in the on-premises release. So the Kanban support's going to be there. Some of the cool new drag and drop and ease of configuration features are going to be there. The one thing that I think is not going to be there right now is the Azure Continuous Deployment stuff. I think that's going to stay in the cloud for now.
Sure.
And then we'll bring that to on-premises a little bit later.
Okay.
But that's sort of on the TFS side. Beyond that, we've done some really nice stuff for testing. I'd say one of the big ones is test case management and manual testing on the web. We've got a tool today called Microsoft Test Manager, mm-hmm. which is our sort of rich client testing tool.
One of my favorite tools, by the way. That's near and dear to my heart, so I'm excited to hear what you're going to tell us here.
It's a cool tool.
Yeah.
But then you get in scenarios where people are doing like their sort of acceptance testing, and they need to test on a machine that is exactly what's going to be in production, and they don't want to install anything on it that's not going to be in production because it might mess up their test results, right? I give them a false positive and say it works when it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our customers have been asking for a while, give me a way to do that. So we're building test case management in the web that'll allow me to review my test cases, edit them, run them, mark pass and fail, step by step, you know, on the whole thing. We'll continue to evolve that, but I'm pretty excited about that.
That's outstanding. So that means, I mean, I know there's a couple of people out there not running Windows, I heard. And so if you're not running Windows, of course, any web app,
well.
Absolutely.
That's great. Yeah. Absolutely. It'll, you know, we support all the browsers, all the platforms. So yeah.
Fantastic.
That'll
what else?
Be good. So another cool one that I'm pretty excited about is a feature called CodeMap. which, you know, we built in 2010 a bunch of new architecture tools, an Architecture Explorer, the layer diagram, the UML diagrams, very nice ways to visualize your code. Mm-hmm. But one of the problems that we've had with it is we've watched people use it is real applications are big.
Right.
And sometimes you want to come at them top down and say, help me understand top down what this app is. But often you're trying to understand a specific piece of code. Like you've been given debug this piece of code, right? There's a bug, go fix it.
Right.
And so you start somewhere where the bug is and you kind of need to build out from there an understanding of the code. Maybe you've never worked in that code anymore, but you got or before, but you've got to fix this bug. So how do I kind of incrementally start at one place and then help me visualize from there how that component relates to other components, relates to other components? So that's really what CodeMap is about, is a tool that allows me to incrementally understand more about the code as I need to understand it.
Sure. Okay, that's great. And so that's also part of the quarterly update.
Yep,
and
then that's going to be in the first preview that we're doing later this month.
How do people get the previews?
There'll be just a
regular download.
There'll be a regular download. We won't be delivering the previews through the Visual Studio Update mechanism since they're pre-release. So they'll just be a regular download, and then once it ships, it'll come through the update mechanism.
Okay. I also heard we're working on testing for SharePoint developers as
well. We are. It's a bunch of stuff for SharePoint.
Yeah.
We're really making a bunch of strides in SharePoint. So first, SharePoint load testing. Mm. Load testing SharePoint turns out to be pretty darn hard because of how dynamic the site is. Like SharePoint's always generating GUIDs and sending them back to you and expecting, you know, the client to send those GUIDs back. So you can't actually record a session because it'll have all the GUIDs generated from the last time. And they'll make no sense and it won't work the next time. So you actually have to parse every response back from the server, parse out the session information, and then turn around and put that into the next request. So sort of a combination of recording and dynamic behavior. So that's done and that's going to be in the release. We also are doing unit testing for SharePoint. Mm. You know, you really, it's a pain to have the whole SharePoint up and running and unit test against a live SharePoint server.
Right.
It's just not designed to work that way. You really want to have an isolated unit test that just tests your code. But sometimes that code interacts with the SharePoint object model. So what are you going to do?
Sure.
Well, the answer is mocking is sort of the general term, or fakes and stubs is the term that we use to talk about faking out pieces of code that allow me to test my code as if it were running in the context of SharePoint, but not actually running in the context of SharePoint. So we've built what we call a SharePoint emulator that plugs into the fakes and stub infrastructure to act like SharePoint. So now I can write my unit tests, run them, validate that they work, and not actually have to host it inside SharePoint.
That's great. And what about coded UI tests? That's one of my favorite test types because you really are operating at the same layer as the user at that point, simulating mouse and keyboard. Is that also going to work here for SharePoint?
It is, yeah. So coded UI tests is a new capability that's coming in this update. It allows you to actually test that the functionality works, you know, the way the user expects it to work. Mm. Test it at the UI layer.
That's great. Very good. So let's kind of pivot on that whole idea of continuous value and continuous delivery. I'm sure there's a lot of our customers out there that are trying to embrace those principles for the applications that they deliver. I mean, we see about publicly how Facebook does this, and they push to production sometimes daily.
Yes.
And I know that, you know, you moving from kind of this box software world into this continuous value delivery world, you've learned a lot along the way. Do you have any tips to share with someone who's sitting out there maybe going through that same transition?
Well, we have learned a lot, and it's been a journey, and the journey's not over. I don't know where we'll end when we're done. Where we are right now is we ship every 3 weeks, and that's working really well for us. Mm-hmm. I mean, from the standpoint of our cadence for our team, it works well. From the standpoint of our sort of customers' ability to recognize new features and consume them, it works reasonably well.
Mm-hmm.
So we're happy with that. It may change as we go forward. In terms of advice, I think trying to get to cloud cadence changes every aspect of development. I mean, you really have to rethink everything from how you decide what you're going to build to how you plan it and project management to how you build it to how you deliver it. It changes your priorities. It really is, it's kind of life altering, right? It just is a different way of doing things. So if I were to like sort of point out some of the biggest cultural changes that operating a service had, let's see. The first one I would say is you only ever install a service once. So, you know, we've been a box product company for a long time, and team, let me just scope it to team for a minute.
Sure.
And, you know, we spend a lot of time on installs, and we try to make sure that, you know, we get installation right and it's reliable, and we got all this telemetry and we know all the different configs people are going to install it in. Well, in a cloud, there's only one, and you're going to only install it once, but what you are going to do is upgrade it a million times, right? So suddenly install becomes not very important and upgrade becomes super important. Plus, because a cloud service has to be up all the time, it changes the way you have to think about upgrade. As a box product, historically, our approach for upgrade has been, hey, every customer has to find some window in which they can take their server down to do their upgrade. They're usually going to plan an upgrade cycle. They'll take it down over a weekend. This is like, for example, this is how we do it. We'll take it down usually Friday night, do all our final backups, upgrade it on Saturday. It leaves us Sunday to recover if something crazy goes wrong in the upgrade. And by Sunday night, the server's back up and, you know, everybody's ready to use it Monday morning. You can't do that in the cloud, right? 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, there's somebody around the world using the service. So it really changes the way you have to think about it. Upgrades have to be done in flight, you know, while that plane is flying.
Sure.
So we had to invest heavily. I mean, I bet we spent 9 months of pretty serious investment, gradually improving, getting it, first getting the window down, and then getting it so that you know, we could update the service without taking the whole service down, but maybe we took down one customer at a time. And now we're at the point where we can update the whole service and never take any customer down, you know, for the entire period.
Wow.
So that was huge. I mean, there are many things. Like I say, how you execute on 3 week cadences had to change a lot, because, you know, in 2012 we executed Scrum and we did 3 week sprints just in our regular development of 2012. But nonetheless, we didn't ship every 3 weeks.
Right.
So as a result, we carried some amount of engineering debt through that. You know, you'd execute a sprint, there'd be some number of bugs that you ended up out of that sprint, and you'd, you know, focus on sort of fixing those in the next sprint. But when you're shipping every 3 weeks, you have to be done at the end of the sprint. So it really changes the way you have to think about how you scope what you're going to build, because it's got to be scoped to a degree in a way that it can be done at the end of the sprint, quality, finished. Now, and we also had to build mechanisms like this thing we call feature flags, which is my ability. Look, clearly you're not going to build every feature in 3 weeks.
Right.
Features are going to take longer than 3 weeks. So, but we have to ship every 3 weeks. So what does that mean? How do you not finish a feature and yet ship every 3 weeks? Well, we have this thing we call feature flags, which allows us to have a feature in the product, but have it disabled. So essentially, you know, if I'm going to work on that feature this sprint but not finish it, all I have to do is do no harm, right? I can't hurt anything else. My code can be in there, nobody will see it, but I do no harm. Now, when I get to the point that that maybe the feature is not finished, but it's ready for somebody to start playing with in production, then I turn the feature flag on for our test team. And I'll say, all right, the testers, you start using this feature in production. No one else will see it. Just people using the test accounts will see it. And then once we get to the point we're happy with that, we turn on the feature flag, say, for our MVPs. And our MVPs start playing with the feature and giving us feedback. And then gradually, you know, we'll turn that feature flag on for the entire customer base and everybody will see it and it appears like a new feature. But in that whole time, we were shipping every 3 weeks. That code was going into production every 3 weeks. So, you know, you just have to look at every problem sideways.
Sure, absolutely. And I've heard your team use the term or the phrase build, measure, learn a lot. We've got 2 minutes left. How do you summarize your process, your approach that you take with that?
Yeah, it's going to be hard to fit in 2 minutes.
Okay.
build, measure, learn is an approach to deciding what you're going to build. You know, Agile is kind of an approach to building software. Build, measure, learn, or lean development is a way to approach how to decide what you're going to build. And what it basically says is build a hypothesis. Build a statement that if I do this, then users will do that, right? Then build whatever sort of minimal increment necessary to test that hypothesis, then deploy it, instrument it so that you can test that hypothesis, and then measure it.
Sure.
And then learn from those measurements. And maybe the users did that, maybe they didn't do that. So maybe your hypothesis is, hey, if I build Kanban, which we just did, I will get more users doing project management.
Right.
So maybe a lot of people use source control and not that many use the Agile features. This is not a true statement, but I'm making up a hypothesis. But what we want to do is we want to pull people into using TFS for project management. So I'm going to say my hypothesis is if I build Kanban, I will get an increase in people using TFS for project management. So I would then build a basic Kanban experience, and you focus on a very small increment, and then you would measure the response of customers. And if the hypothesis turns out to be true, you might, you then develop the next hypothesis, which says, okay, if I build a richer Kanban experience, then I'll get more, or,
right.
Whatever it is. And you sort of very gradually and incrementally build up your product by building a hypothesis, building it, testing it, learning from it, and then looping. And it's all about making that loop as fast as you can,
right.
Which is where Agile comes in, right? Because
sure.
Agile helps you tighten down that loop from an implementation and workflow perspective.
Continuous integration, continuous deployment, and then ultimately continuous feedback.
That's right.
Well, that's great. Brian, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
And I know you're not one to rest, so I'm sure you're probably off to a bunch of launch events after this, probably.
Yeah.
And we're going to pause for a programming break, and then we will be back to Channel 9 Live here at the Visual Studio 2012 launch.